You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
There was a little bar in Mill Valley where all the Starfleet trainees used to go.
The 602 Club.
You know it.
I was there more times than I can remember.
There was an idea to bring together a group of remarkable people to see if we could become something more.
So when they needed us,
we could fight the battles
they never could. The end is near.
Hello and welcome to the 602 Club and welcome to the Soul Gem. It's very peaceful here. I hope everybody's having a great time. Just feel the warmth and the sun and the peace. Yes. Well,
who did you sacrifice to get here?
I don't want to tell you. As you can tell, we're going to be talking about Infinity War because nobody is talking about anything else but Infinity War, except for that Ant-Man Wasp trailer. But no, that's another time. I'm so excited to be here. And as you already heard, I have one of my favorite people podcasting with me, Drea Kaufman.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
I'm just disappointed that Matt won't tell me who he sacrificed.
I mean, it ruins the sacrifice if I tell you.
It's not like a birthday wish that if you tell, it won't come
right.
True.
You don't know. You don't know what I had to go through to get this stone.
Maybe I do.
Hashtag who's your Gamora.
Who's your Gamora? Oh, man, that's weird. Anyway, and you can also hear I have with me, I'm so excited, Brandi Jacklin.
Hello. I'm so happy to be here.
I am happy for both of you to be here, too. Before we dive in, quick reminder, of course, you can find all the shows here we do on Trek FM over on iTunes at iTunes.com/Trek FM. Make sure you're following us on Twitter at Trek FM and, of course, on Facebook at Facebook.com/Trek FM. We're also got the listeners only discussion group. You can find the Babel Conference. If you're on Facebook, just type Babel into the search field. Or if you go to the website at Trek.fm, click discussion on the menu bar and it'll bring you over there as well. And you can join the conversation because there's so many conversations to be had. And then last but not least, if you're on the website and you'd like to send us an email, go to trek.fm/contact, choose a show, choose the 602 Club, and that'll come to me and any of the hosts that week. And that way we can converse with you that way. Now, all that said, because we want to go fast because this is a big movie. And I wanted to ask you guys, as we were gearing up for the war, the gears of war are turning. Where were you coming from with this one? Like, were you super excited that Infinity War was coming? I want to know what your psyche was going into the theater.
Well, honestly, I have been hoping that this would happen from the moment Iron Man started. Because I thought, if they're really going to do the Avengers, they could get to Infinity War. Or wars, as it was in the comics. Well, there were lots of infinity things in the comics.
Yeah, there's a lot of infinity.
So many infinity. There's an infinite number.
Lots of wars.
There's an infinite number of
secret
wars.
There's civil war. But actually, I was excited, but it wasn't until like right before the movie started, like when they're doing the digital. This is, you know, this theater has digital theater sound system. And I started going, oh, it's actually happening. I can't believe this is happening. And so I'm like having this emotional meltdown. And my husband's just like oblivious at first until I'm like crushing his hand. Just, you know, during the whole Marvel thing, I'm like crushing his hand. He's like, yeah, I crushed his hand more than a few times during that film. He's so sweet to just let me do that. There were a few times that he did let go of my hand and just kind of stretched his fingers.
Just a little blood
run
back
like,
in.
Honey, I love you, but seriously, I need my hand.
It's like you're having a baby over here.
Yeah, so it was, that was.
I was having a baby called Infinity War.
So. Sorry, I was it was
so Brandy was excited.
I didn't get that at all. Yeah. I mean, I think she was just maybe.
Yeah, I mean,
it was kind of meh. Just like whatever. Yeah. I guess it's okay. Yeah.
What about you, Drea?
So I have very limited comic book knowledge of the Avengers. Most of my comic book knowledge is either Spider-Man or the X-Men. So not, I mean, there's some overlap there, and eventually, you know, there's obviously an interplay there, but I was definitely not like that familiar with the storylines and stuff. I knew it was a big one. I mean, I think if you know anything about any of it, you know it's a big one. But I think for me, I've been feeling a little burnt out on some of the Marvel. Everything's this huge hype, and sometimes it meets that hype, and sometimes you get the Inconvenience of Ultron. So I think that
Inconvenience of Ultron.
It sounds like a British movie.
It does. Damn,
Ultron, you're saying.
That's the Monty Python version. The Inconvenience of Ultron.
It's like the importance of
being another inconvenience.
Yes. So, you know, I was sort of setting my expectations at Ultron that maybe it was going to horrifically let me down and just be sort of. So I went in with very low expectations, and which I think is good. I mean, it's the same reason I don't really watch movie trailers, is I don't want to get myself all hyped up and then be really disappointed like I was with like A Wrinkle in Time.
It's like being really all jacked up a Mountain Dew. Then you come down and you're like,
or watching or the Terminator, yeah, or whatever that last one
Genesis
was. Genesis or whatever.
That was a weird
Genesis,
one.
Genesis.
That's it. Genesis.
Yeah. Genesis. Yeah. It sounds like something you go to the gynecologist for.
Yes, it does.
A little too on the nose. Yeah.
It's gonna be a great show, folks.
Hand breaking in OBs. Yeah. But yeah, so I went in with moderate to low expectations for it, and I'm glad I did. So,
you know, I'm a little bit in there, but between both of you, you know, because I do think for me there has been a little bit of the Marvel fatigue, and I do think part of that is just. The geek culture right now is so overhyped on whatever is coming. It's Star Wars, it's Marvel, it does get difficult to be able to feel like we can actually judge the movies for what they are, because before they come out, it's already like, and actually, Martin Scorsese was talking about this at an event the other day about like, you know, movies immediately get judged now on Rotten Tomatoes, right? And they're either like the best thing ever, or they're like, you know, 17%, right? Yeah. And so it becomes this either or thing instead of like really getting a chance to go in, watch the movie, judge it for what it is, the art that it is, if it's art, you know, like, or if it's just the Transformers. not that I'm knocking, just I like the original Transformers, but the rest of them, that's where you get that whole, like, it's the Transformers. Anyway.
It's okay. It's Michael Bay.
Michael Bay. I was a little bit like you, Dre, was like, I'm trying to not get super hyped on this. And part of it too was just like nobody's ever tried anything like this before. In the sense of like building up for 10 years, 18 movies to then explode all over the screen what everybody's always hoped that they would get, you know? I'm with you too. Like, how can it live up to this kind of hype? And so that's where I was coming from. And I just wanted it to be good. You know, I wanted to be able to enjoy it. And I'm hoping for some great moments with these characters that I have spent 10 years with, you know, and I have come to like a lot of them, you know, whether it's Captain America, or I really love, you know, personally Rocket Raccoon. He's one of my favorites, or, you know, all these characters coming together. Like, I want to see them get to interact together and all that stuff, you know, and hopefully they'll do it well. And I think, to me, that was the best way to come into it. That, and I only watched the trailers. I didn't watch any TV spots.
I didn't either.
Or anything else, because I didn't want anything ruined. I just wanted to see the trailers. That's it. I don't want to know anything else. So Coming down to it, though, I thought this movie is really interesting. I wanted to talk to you guys because it really kind of becomes a movie about the villain for the first time in any of the Marvel movies. I don't think that it's any you know, real revelation to say, yeah, the Marvel villains haven't been great for the most part. There's been a few standouts. But for the most part, we don't go, oh, man, the depth of that, you know, Thor Ragnarok villain was just, I mean, Hela was, I just, you know, she's cool and everything, but it's not like we're praising her depth or anything. This movie is about, really, Thanos. It's from his point of view, which I thought was fascinating.
We spend a lot of time with Thanos.
I think
majority of your time with Thanos, which I think was smart. Mm-hmm. I think taking as many characters and as many storylines as you have, it is smart to spend your time on the thing that ties them all together versus trying to spend your time with all of the individual storylines.
Yes, absolutely. Well, and I wanted to ask you guys, so let's kind of break Thanos down. Let's talk about his plan and his motivations.
So now we're psychologists. Mm-hmm.
Yes, basically.
I took psychology.
So we're going to psychoanalyze a big purple dude with, you know, a hairy... Well, he doesn't have a hairy chin.
It's not hairy. It's kind of a...
I was going to say what...
It's like extra dimpled. It's like...
Yeah, I was going to say what, you know, Pratt said about it, but I mean, it's a little bit more PG-13, almost rated R for this show. So anyway, what did you guys think? Because his plan is this. He wants to end half of life in all of the universe through the Infinity Gauntlet and having all the stones so that he can give the rest of the universe a chance. And all of this comes because he's motivated by what happened on his own planet with overpopulation. So basically, really, Thanos is just worried about overpopulation of the universe.
Really, Thanos is China.
Is that a good thing?
And so I wanted to ask you guys about that because to me, like, I don't know. I'm having trouble kind of like they try to make him have all of these kind of this kind of depth or whatever. But in the end, like, it just seems kind of like a strange plan. Like, I'm going to have all these stones and all this power. And like, the only thing I can think of is, you know, if we just ended half of it, half the people, then the universe would be cool. Like, that's all you can come up with infinite power and time and space. And like, you control all of these powers. And like, yeah, all I've got is, you know, let's just end half of it. And it'll work out.
Well, having read comics.
Well, I know Infinity Gauntlet. Because obviously there he's trying, it's even a little bit stranger because he's just trying to impress death.
Yes. Well, and I,
so this,
I
yeah,
honestly,
this
think,
would try to make it more altruistic.
Yeah.
But it's more Hitler-tristic than
it is
like actual touristic.
And see, that's the thing is that you can take this somewhat noble idea, but he has twisted it to the point where it's just, anyway, it reminds me of the Star Trek Discovery book, Drastic Measures. And in that case, I'm not going to say that. People might not have read it. I don't want to spoil it.
No, you can talk about it because, it's Kodos the Executioner.
Kodos the Executioner. And he kills.
Yeah, and that comes from the original series.
He kills half the people on the planet so that the other half might live. And
Thanos and Kodos are the same person.
Yes, it's Thanos the Executioner. So, actually, there's a reason why they call him the Mad Titan, because when he presented his plan, he was met with, oh, you're mad. So that's why how he earned that nickname. They don't really call him that much in the cinematic universe, which is fine. But I wouldn't be surprised that if all of this is, as he said, he's trying to save the universe, but at the same time,
quote unquote, ding ding,
yeah,
quote, air quotes,
air quotes,
save the universe.
But I wouldn't be surprised if we find out in the future that he was really trying to get death's attention as well, because they had a falling out a while back, and he's just like this stupid obsessed stalker that will just do anything to get her attention. But
I'd say, you know, murdering the quadrillions is, yeah, it's definitely a way to get death's attention.
Yeah.
She notices a lot more people at her doorstep.
Yeah. Does she suddenly just go, oh, wow, Thanos. I had no idea you had this in you. I mean, it's just like, what's the end game there? No matter how you slice it, this guy is nutso. He is nutso. He is mad in the classic sense of the word. So knowing that from the comics, I'm thinking that during the entire movie. I'm like, yeah, but you really just want death to love you again. So
I feel like he's not like certifiable, like,
oh, Roman, no.
Right? Who was literally crazy pants, right? Like obsessed. I get this.
Well, I mean, a dance off stopped him. So yes, he was crazy.
Yeah. He was mad as a bag of cats.
Yeah. But I feel like you have this misguided obsession of a different sense that is basically he's a giant, calm zealot. Like, he does not have any emotion. He religiously follows what he believes. He converts others to believe that. And he literally earns the term zealot. He reminds you of those cult leaders who keep their calm even when you're, I mean, think Charles Manson. Like, you're talking like creepy level of zealot that there is no, he will see this through until he dies. Like, there is nothing you can do. And to me, that makes him somewhat more of a terrifying villain than some of these others that are kind of unbridled rage, if you will. Like Ronan, who's just kind of crazy pants, but you can probably stop him. He has such determination and depth of his belief in that what he's doing is truly right, that it, to me, it's even more terrifying than some of the other villains in a much more understated, like, emotional level, right? Like, he may not be terrifying and he goes raging, rampaging, hulking out everywhere. You know, he doesn't even fight most of the battles himself. He has others do it for him. But it's that ability and that charisma that he gets to convert, like, his little group, his Black Order, right? That is just, I mean, he clearly had Gamora and Nebula fooled for a while. You know, his just, he has this charisma that does have that sort of Hitler-esque feeling to it, or Red Skull kind of feeling to it, that to me, that's a scarier type of villain than some of the others we've seen.
I like that you point out this kind of like religiosity, this zealot nature, because in the end, what Thanos is trying to do is to be a god.
Mm-hmm.
He sees a problem in the universe. He thinks that he is the only one that has the will to solve it. And I thought what was most interesting is that you get at the beginning of the movie, you know, after it's spoiler, full spoilers. OK, so if you but when he kills Loki, you know, Loki says to him before he dies, you will never be a god, which is, I love it's because it's funny because Loki knows what it's actually like to be a god because he's the god of mischief. But there is this thing in Thanos where what he is just a very bad false god. He is a being trying to be God, control the powers of a god, because when you think about it, the Infinity Stones, when you put them all together, they basically give you the power of creation and all of what it means to be a god. But you have to be somebody who is worthy to wield those powers, just like you have to be worthy to wield Meow Meow.
Meow Meow!
And so...
Yay!
But what we see in Thanos, I think, is, and what's most fascinating about him is that he is somebody that is so religiously devoted to this one idea that he has. He has absolutely no imagination on how to solve the universe's problems other than what he thinks, what he's told himself is the only truth, which is half the universe has to end for the rest of it to begin, which I'm thinking, you got all the power in the universe literally at your fingertips. Like, you can make the universe bigger, right? You can make there be more resources. You can make it okay for this, like, quadrillions of people to exist. And there being absolutely no problems with that because you have all the powers of you have the powers of infinity.
The Infinity Stone is not a genie.
No.
No, like, but
doesn't
I mean,
grant
like,
you
but
wishes.
When you put them like... all together, you literally have control over all of the elements, including
yes.
time, death, yes. reality. All of these things are at your fingertips.
Yes, but controlling reality doesn't create more resources.
No.
Well, but,
like,
I
you
mean,
can't make something out of nothing. You can't expand the universe because you can control
well,
reality.
See,
like, you can control what people think exists.
Yeah, that's what I don't think that... I think you can, because after reading the comic book with what you can do with the Infinity Gauntlet, yeah, you can do whatever you want with it. I mean, you really can. So
for me, this Thanos... almost, I didn't really take it so much as him wanting to be a god. Like, I agree with the Loki. I agree maybe that's what it looks like from the outside, especially at the beginning, right? And everything we know of Thanos. So I took it more as, like, the believer from Serenity, where he's doing what he feels like needs to happen. And he's doing what he feels is necessary, even though it's not popular or right, according to, you know, laws. And that I almost feel like he understands that there's no place for him in the world, which is why he doesn't want to, like, rule the universe when he's done. He just wants to go and rest and watch a sunrise or sunset. I don't remember. But I almost get the impression that he understands that what he's doing will no longer have a place for him. So that's kind of more what I took it like, that he's creating a better world for everybody else and he doesn't want accolades or glory or anything like that. And that there's a sort of misconception among everyone who's been collecting these Infinity Stones that he does want to be a god. I sort of feel like throughout the film we get indications of that, and especially with our end scene where he just is sort of quietly sitting alone on a hilltop watching the sun rise.
Let's go with rise. Let's go with rise.
Yeah. Let's go with rise. Watching the sun rise, that, you know, you get this idea that, like, he's not looking for infamy and glory. He just wants to set the world right the way that he feels like it needs to be. So in the sense, he feels like he's a god and that he should control these things. But I don't think of him as a god like we had with Ego in the last Guardians, who wanted to replicate himself around the world
right.
and control the world. I almost got it like he wants yeah. to do what needs to be done and then he's good. He's done. He won't use it. He's good without the gauntlet, you know?
Yeah, I kind of think of him. Specifically here, I think of the idea of God, because what we're getting is a perversion of the creation story in Genesis, where in the end, God rested, you know, and it was good. But this is not good. Thanos thinks it's good, but it's not. And so what we're getting is that, again, he's somebody who's not. He's not worthy to hold these stones and do what he's trying to do because his idea is corrupt. It is a corruption of all that is beautiful. And it's very much a juxtaposition with everything that the heroes are doing, right? Because, and I came to this, I thought it was really interesting because I was thinking through this. The reason that the heroes don't trade lives is because they're not willing to sacrifice what is most precious. They're here to save lives, not to end them, if they don't have to. And so, whereas, you know, we totally see that what we get, Thanos is willing to sacrifice everybody else's life, but his own, to do what he thinks is best. He might sacrifice it emotionally, quote unquote, you know, for what he feels like he has to do. But, you know, that's just kind of like BS in the end. Like, that he's just telling himself his quote unquote truth, which we all know is definitely not the truth. So I feel like it, again, it is what they have is they have created somebody who is complex enough, but yeah, when you come down to his plan, it is just kind of crazy pants. Like, you're like, yeah. No, this is insane, dude.
I did really enjoy it though. Like, I did really enjoy getting to delve into a deeper level villain and have a villain that we got to kind of follow along and see the progression of how he sort of, you know, tries to succeed, or in this case actually succeeds, versus following all the, and I mean, we've gotten to know the superheroes so well, I don't feel like I need to spend more time with them. So it was really nice to be able to spend time with a new character, even though it happened to be the villain. I think it also gave it a different feel. Like, you don't have this happen in the other movies, so you're like, oh, this is unique. Like, this is different.
Well, and that's what made Loki one of the better villains, is because we spent time
yeah.
with him.
Yeah.
But with Thanos, the biggest problem with him, and this is not a problem that I have with the movie, but it's just with the way Thanos thinks, the character. His issue is that and we don't know how old he is. We don't know if he's 100 years old, 1,000 years old. We don't know. But it's long enough for his planet to basically have gone extinct. And so he's built up this idea in his mind for so long that he literally cannot see any other option than the option that he has deemed necessary. And that's why he doesn't do anything else except this thing he's been telling himself for possibly a millennia. We don't even know how long it's been. And so he is, and that's where the whole zealot thing comes in, like Drea said, is that he is so set on doing it, no matter what the cost, that that's all he sees. There's never going to be another option for him. And the biggest problem with that is who are you to decide this for an entire universe? Where do you get the stones to believe that you...
Where do you get the chin to believe? Where do you get the chin?
That big purple chin, how does that influence you to believe that you get to make that choice for the entire universe?
Well, if you want to go if we really want to go down this whole like psychosomatic path here, because I think we totally can with this character. You know, he's totally disassociated himself with life in general. He cannot, the reason he can just rid the whole universe of half of it is because he does not understand or associate individual human life. Like Matt was saying, the Avengers do, right? We don't trade lives because every life is precious and unique of its own.
Yeah, it's the sanctity of life. Like the Avengers have that. Thanos does not. Yeah.
Right. And it's I'm sure it's rooted in some long, deep, sought after. He saw half his planet die. And the only way he could cope is to completely disconnect and disassociate himself with life and with what it is and what that loss actually felt like. Because losing half of your culture, I mean, Spock lost it. You know, you think about Spock losing all of, you know, Vulcan when he's all the Vulcans when he's, you know, watches the planet explode or implode or whatever it did. But you know, like that causes such an emotional trauma on people that he's just disconnected. He's like, I can't think about human life. I can't think about all that loss. I can't think about what this means. I just have to prevent others from having to go through this. You know, he's literally mad in the sense that like something has disconnected in his mind and he physically cannot handle the like PTSD of reconnecting that. So, you know, it has probably been and is an extraordinary amount of time that he has convinced himself that this is the way and that he is sparing everyone from this horrible thing that we just don't even know. I mean, how many times have you been around someone who's like, oh, I'm helping you. You just don't even know. And you're like, dude.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's what's happening here, but on a giant godlike scale.
Giant purple godlike scale.
What's fascinating to me is to see actually how Tony and Thanos have some of the same problems.
Yes.
And that's what I thought was interesting. And that's where, for me, honestly, one of the greatest villains in the Marvel Universe has always been Tony. Because Tony can't get over himself.
Inadvertently. Yep.
But part of that is just because he won't listen to other people. He keeps doing the same things over and over again with expecting a different result. And in very many ways, he has a lot in common with Thanos. So I'm very interested to see. Obviously,
what he takes away from this, knowing half the world is gone.
If we finally get Tony making a change that's more permanent in his life after seeing this, if he'll actually learn that lesson,
he'll see what an obsessive nature turn into.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just so you guys know, in the comics, there is a race of people that are religious zealots that come about because of Tony jettisoning a lot of his old tech into space, and they come across it, and they are bad, bad people. So yeah, his carelessness has caused a lot of trouble in the future.
I can see that. I also find it interesting that in this movie, we sort of have to learn the same lesson that we've learned in all the other Avengers movies, in that, like, if you don't work together, it will never work. It will never. I mean, all of these people try to take him on. Oh, I can stop him. Like, two or three people are like, oh, I got this, guys. And you're like, no,
I'm just waiting for Superman to show up and be like, hold my beer. I got this.
His name is actually Adam Warlock. That's the guy who you're looking for.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So, we were introduced to him briefly at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy 2. So, yeah.
Yes.
But he won't probably come until after. I mean, Guardians isn't scheduled until after the second part of this.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to solve this the same way they did in the comics. I think it's going to come down
Warlock's
to...
Warlock's not going to be
we'll
our savior.
See.
I think it's going to be Captain
I don't
Marvel.
Know.
Actually... Well, Captain Marvel will come in, but I think it's let's talk about that at the end. So yeah,
okay.
We'll get
sorry,
to the
sorry, jumping ahead.
No, just a side note. I saw a really funny meme, and it had all the it had Thanos showing up, like saying, "I demand your silence or whatever," and then all the Marvel heroes being like, "Oh," and then Superman just like, "Hold my beer," and then he's like, "It takes all of you to stop one dude." Anyway, I just
it took three people to stop Doomsday.
You DC fan.
Well, you silly DC fan. I love, and what was interesting is Thanos' relationship with Gamora and with Nebula. And I wanted to ask you guys, obviously he doesn't really care about Nebula, which I thought
were
was...
Were we our parents' favorite? Is that what you were going to ask us?
Gamora is definitely his fave. And I wanted to ask you, though, because what was fascinating to me is... Obviously, the Soul Stone accepts his sacrifice, right?
Yeah.
But does he really love her?
Sure.
I don't... I know, because real love is sacrificial.
Yeah.
I have theories.
But not sacrificial as in, yeah, I'll throw her on the altar of the Soul Stone.
So, movies tend to use certain thematic elements to represent things. And generally, water means you're not based in reality. So he throws Gamora off the cliff, and he wakes up in a weird puddly water of sand with the stone.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. I question whether Gamora actually died, and whether that, like, what happened there, like, because that because of that kind of mirrory water part, it to me that had to do mean something. And if it doesn't, then I'll be wrong, but. It had to mean something. So I am curious if the stone asks you to... I mean, first of all, why the hell does it ask you to sacrifice someone? Because, oh yeah, I'm going to sell... You have to sell your soul by committing murder. Like, wouldn't the baddest of bad guys be like 1,000% willing to do that? Oh, sure, I'll throw someone off a cliff. Why not?
Well, but it's supposed to be somebody that you actually do care about. That's my
question.
Well, it's
usually the thing you love most.
Exactly. So that's my question If that's the case, if that's the only way to get the stone, what they're saying is that somewhere in there he loves her, but real true love is sacrificial. It's not willing to sacrifice somebody. So I'm wondering what the stone considers love. Has it been watching too many soap operas or something? I don't know.
I mean, maybe. I think that it's more. I think that the stone, the point that they were trying to make that I don't think it worked very well, I think it was kind of forced, is that you would be willing to give up everything for this. And instead of everything, it asks for the thing you care for most in this world in order to obtain it. And I think it's trying to look at some sort of, I don't know, clarity of purpose, right? They want to make sure whoever gets the stone has a real clear intention, is kind of an obsessed person like Thanos. But I still think it was a weird thing for it to ask for. It should have asked you to do that, and then if you did that, not given you the stone, because you're not pure of soul, you know what I mean? Like, it just seems weird.
I honestly don't think the soul gives two fig Newtons about purity. The Soul Stone does not care about purity. The Soul Stone wants souls. That is all that it wants. It doesn't care how it gets them. The funny thing is it seems like it made up this riddle specifically for the Red Skull, because the Red Skull has nothing to sacrifice, because the only thing he loves is himself, and he's certainly not going to sacrifice himself. Therefore, it's a treasure he can never possess himself. So, but I don't think that the Soul Stone cares at all how it gets its souls.
I hadn't thought about it that way. That's interesting.
Well, and it could be that care about, but that doesn't mean necessarily love.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm just reading too much into it. And that, yes, that is somebody that he cares about, which we can see he does care about her, right? But it's not true. Yeah, okay. So I get that.
Well, I think it is. I mean, I think for him it is love, right? And but for him, he...
What is love?
I mean, if you're a zealot, if you're a zealot...
Don't hurt me. He feels
that he loves her, but he feels like his mission is greater than what he, like, this is again why I don't really think he thought of himself as a god, because he had to sacrifice, like he said at the end, everything in order to achieve his like weird obsessive goal, right? So for him, he probably did very much so love Gamora, but for him, it wasn't about him. It was about this idea, this crazy messed up ideal that he had, that he felt he had to do. It was his calling. He kept saying he was the only one with the will to do it. So in this case, I don't think it was about loving this power he gets from the Infinity Stone more. I think it was that he felt that Gamora should feel like privileged almost to be the sacrifice because she's doing it for a greater good.
A greater good.
Again, it's the perversion. It's the perversion of the cross, right?
Correct. Like, it's the perversion of what's happening.
Exactly.
Here. You can't think about this logically because there's no reasoning with him, right? I mean, there's no getting between him and his goal.
Well, and it would be like God killing his son on the cross, but Jesus not wanting to die. You know,
right?
But that's not how.
Which he didn't. So,
well, but that's not how the story goes. Jesus is willing to do.
He's willing to, but that doesn't mean he wanted to. He wasn't like, yeah, well,
no.
Bring it on.
But I'm gonna say, like, he is a part of the plan in the sense that he knows what's coming, and he willingly chooses to lay down his life. Whereas Gamora, no, not so much. So again, it's like it's like that perversion of
the
this
story.
Kind of biblical. Like, what's interesting is that this entire movie is a perversion of the entire biblical epic. Of epic proportion, like they're just we're really screwing with the biblical themes here, and kind of showing them almost in a way as if they are with all of these people that aren't actually gods trying to do godlike things. This is what happens when beings try to be god that aren't gods.
This whole hunt for the soul stone thing though didn't work for me. Part of it did explain some of what we got in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 that I know a lot of people didn't really enjoy, which is the whole Nebula Gamora family thing. But
well,
I mean,
so did I. I loved
some people did not. But I mean, at least it gave some context here why she actually cared about her being tortured. Because if we didn't have that storyline in Guardians, then why the crap would Gamora care, right? Like, they always had this tension and, you know, there's nothing. Now, all of a sudden, you create the sisterly love and the guilt and all that, right? Like, that's why she even tells Thanos where the Soul Stone is in the first place. But I didn't... There's so much to that whole thing, one, that just didn't work for me, and two, that I didn't understand. Like, if you knew that that's where it was and that he would have to sacrifice something, then why the hell would you go?
Well, I don't think she knew that.
Yeah.
She only knew...
Then she didn't really know where the stone was. She just knew what planet it was on.
She knew that... I mean, there was a map to the...
Then why not just take him to the planet and be like...
Yeah, like he'd like, let her do that?
But even so, like, it was just such a, she seemed such a willing participant in that part. And then just for me, like, as Zoe Saldana's acting in that scene was so forced. Like, ha, you don't love anything. Like, it was obvious. As soon as you got up there and they're like, you have to get rid of what you love. You're just like, uh-oh, bye, Gamora. Like, you knew from the beginning. And she kept like, what? Like, it was, didn't work for me. Wasn't a fan.
I somewhat agree with you because I've never been a huge fan of Zoe Saldana in these films. I feel like she is being asked to do a lot of things that she's not very good at. She's really good at taking names and, you know, taking names and
chewing bubble gum and taking names.
You know, is what I'm trying to say. Yes, thank you. Sorry, Mantis. I apologize.
Yes, you owe her an apology.
But yeah, I do. I should have totally apologized. But yeah, I agree with you. Like, that is the weakest part to me. But it's interesting because I think the Soul Stone will be the one that's going to be the most important, because I think that's why Gamora's not dead, is she's actually in the Soul Stone.
Oh, she's actually of course she's in the Soul Stone.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I just, that whole scene, it was weird. And like, she didn't seem afraid and she should kind of feel afraid, or like, I don't know. There was just so much about the entire scene that like, I see how they wrote it and what they were trying to do, but it just left so many like lingering questions for me. And it just, it was to me the weakest part of this whole thing.
So 40 minutes into Avengers movie, we haven't really talked about any Avengers. So we should probably get to them because, yeah, we have a lot to talk about.
Well, we talked about Gamora.
Well, you know what I mean.
And Tony Stark.
Yeah, you know what I mean. So the Avengers have these groups that they're split up into. We've got Tony, Strange, Peter. Not Tony being strange. He's with Dr.
Strange. Oh, we're using
Tony Strange, Peter.
Yeah, yeah. Some of the Guardians. Then we get Thor, Rocket, and Groot. And then we have the largest group, which is Cap, Black Widow, Black Panther, War Machine, Vision, Scarlet Witch, Winter Soldier, and Hulk. And, of course, the rest of Wakanda. So I just kind of wanted to...
All forever. Of Wakanda,
yeah,
guys.
All of Wakanda came to the party.
Forever!
Wakanda forever! So... First, just wanted to ask you guys about this first group, Tony and Strange and Peter and some of the Guardians. Honestly, I can't believe that Tony and Strange can fit into one ship in the first place with all of that
egos.
Yeah. And Star-Lord.
Star-Lord, yes. And it's like...
And Thor.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. But seriously, Star-Lord, Strange, and Tony.
Oh, my God.
Is there any more ego that... I mean, they're bigger egos than
Rocket.
Ego.
Rocket. If you had thrown Rocket in there, I think you could have had like the quadfecta of ego.
I mean, you, with all the hot air, you could have flown anywhere in the galaxy.
but Steven has learned some humility. So
some.
But he's also aware of what he can do. And just from reading the comics, you guys don't even know the stuff he actually sees. It's crazy stuff, man. Stuff that would drive any normal man crazy. So he's, in my opinion, he's the least stupid of the bunch. And he's
no,
the,
I agree. I think he's the
he
key
is
to
the
this.
Absolute. He's the linchpin for sure. And I think that because of what he has learned, and there's a lot we haven't seen that he's been through, that has made him. Yes, he's confident in his abilities, but he is not Tony Stark arrogant. So there's a difference.
It's a different kind of ego, but it's still a pretty big... He's a big personality.
He's got to be that way. Otherwise...
I thought it's so interesting that we didn't get the Hulk. Like, that the Hulk got afraid
of Thanos.
Yes, I loved... Like, I thought that was so interesting.
I'm like, the Hulk is afraid for the first time ever.
Really? I hated it. I was like, why do we have to have... Okay, look, I get that they can't do another Hulk movie because of rights issues, right?
They can't do a full-on Hulk movie like they want to.
So, I get that we're trying to do, like... character growth for Hulk, but I don't want to see
we've woven through every storyline.
I don't want to see the Hulk have performance issues the whole movie. That's what we've got, and it was just obnoxious. Like, I got to the point where I was like, okay, this is not, it's not funny anymore because it's just the same joke over and over again, and you're not really driving home any good points with it. You're not using
it. Yeah, but
it.
For me, like, we didn't spend enough time with him that it got annoying. Like, we spent enough time across all the characters and more time, like we talked about with Thanos, that, like, for me, we didn't have the opportunity to dive into that. So I know it'll come up in the next one when we have a moment to, like, stop and take a breath and he has a moment to, like, have a little inner conversation with Hulk. But I did like getting to see more of Bruce
Agree.
Banner. Like,
yes, but he also came off as an idiot in the movie. And I was very frustrated about that.
Himself, because he's not the Avenger. Like, the Hulk is the Avenger, not Bruce Banner.
It is true, but Bruce is also a genius.
Yes, but that doesn't mean that he's
It doesn't
brave.
Mean he can fly it a spaceship mean, or a Hulkbuster.
It doesn't mean that he can know that the Hulk's not coming out, but he's still going to run into battle. Like, it's such a it's a different character than the Hulk. And I thought it was interesting we got to spend time with the different character. And I really hope the Hulk comes back in the next movie. It was interesting that it was a thing. Like, we got to spend time with Bruce Banner in a condition that is not his, like, not anyone that he would ever pick for himself. So for me, I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I can see how it would get old.
But
it didn't
bother
me either, because we spent so much time with Hulk in Ragnarok and very, very little Bruce. I mean, he was basically locked in the trunk for a couple of years and didn't even know where he was. I mean, he was so deep in that trunk that he didn't know anything that was going on. And so for him to come back to Earth after all of that has to be disconcerting, at least. And now he's got to fight a battle, and he doesn't have the one weapon that he's supposed to be reliable for. And now he's got to just do what he's got to do. And, you know, other people would run away. But that's the thing about courage and being brave. Being brave isn't doing something because you're not afraid. It's doing something because you are afraid. But you know it has to be done. And that takes greater courage than just saying, okay, well, Hulk, come on. Okay, you're not coming. Well, I'm going to be over here, guys. No, he just goes right in and does what needs to be done.
Yeah, and I mean, I can see that. I think I just kind of...
It wasn't, you didn't enjoy it.
No,
like,
that wasn't something you wanted.
That is fine.
When it's not even just what I didn't want. It's just, I guess what I would have liked is I can tell what they're trying to do with the Hulk. They're trying to get it to a place where Banner and the Hulk are actually more one person and they work together.
So they're more symbiotic. Yeah,
exactly. I felt like this was kind of a clumsier way to do that, because we're not getting the time to really develop that. And so if it was a little bit more developed, I think it would be a pretty cool story. In fact, it would make a really interesting Hulk movie, but we're having to cram it into a movie that already has 40,000 different characters and we don't have time to deal with it. So quickly, I didn't love the Doctor Strange movie, but I liked Doctor Strange in this movie, because I agree with you, Brandy. What I got by the end of it is Strange is the only one who truly understands the stakes.
What's happening.
And part of that is because he truly understands his powers and his mission and what he is called to do. Unlike most, in fact, he's probably the most Cap-like of all the other heroes, where in the sense that he understands who he is, what his mission is, and he's like, you know, Cap says to Ross, he's like, I'm done with asking for forgiveness. Like, he understands permission. Who he is, where he is, what his mission is, what he's meant to do on this earth. Strange is that same person. He understands what his purpose, his motivation, and why he's here on this planet, you know? And I thought that was really neat to see that. Whereas, you know, some of the other heroes they're all kind of in the midst of that, trying to get to that place that these other two are. So I thought that was great.
I feel like that Doctor Strange is like Thanos, like Tony Stark is like Thanos, like... So Thanos is like the manifestation of the ultimate obsession that we've talked about for Stark, right? I feel a little bit like Thanos has this calling and this mission that he's willing to sort of self-sacrifice for, the same way that Doctor Strange has this mission and this calling that he's willing to self-sacrifice for. They're just kind of like the two ends of the spectrum, right? Like, one is the ultimate great good and one is Chris Chance. So... You know, I feel a little bit like, in that sense too, you can kind of mirror his character with Thanos as well, which is probably why he understands the most of what's going on. And he understands Thanos the most because he can relate in a different way. He has the same drive, but for a different different result.
And he can literally see the future.
Yes.
And he can literally
see. Well, and that's what I thought was really interesting too, is that, he understands the power of the stone that he holds, right? And so I love when he goes and he says, you know, I've seen 14,250,000+, and we only got one chance. So, which I just wanted to scream in a theater. So you're saying there's a chance? which probably wouldn't have gone over as well.
Well done.
Yeah.
Let me tell you later about something that got screamed in my theater, but I'm not ready for that part yet.
So, but I what I liked about that is that unlike Thanos, who just thinks he knows what should happen, Thanos isn't omniscient. He doesn't know everything, right? But in some ways, Strange has an omniscience because he does go forward in time, see every outcome that could be, and then what could... So, like, he is... Like, I love that you pulled that out. I think that's perfect, Drea. He is Thanos, but he's the one who actually is more worthy to hold the stone that he has been entrusted to take care of. So, I love that. What...
You didn't love.
Okay, look, I love Chris Pratt and I love Star-Lord. I think it's a really fun character. I think that we're taking...
I'm nodding in agreement already with you.
I think we're taking it too far. His, and there's no other way to say it but his dickishness. Like,
yeah.
He needs to stop being such a man boy and just start learning how to be a man. And he needs somebody to teach that to him. And I'm a little bit frustrated that, I don't know, I after, you know, now we've seen him in three movies, I would like there to seem to be a little bit more maturity in this character.
You'd like a little character growth? Is that
what
I'm
hearing? Yeah, but this movie, it just felt, it almost felt more like volume one Peter than the end of volume two Peter. Because end of volume two, I feel like, he's gone through a lot, and I feel like he had really grown. It's kind of like Iron Man 3, and then, wait, what? All of a sudden, you know, it's like they sometimes forget that these characters have gone through really big moments, like the aha moment, and this movie, I was just a little bit frustrated with him until the moment where he was really willing to pull the trigger, and then I was like, oh, wow, he really does love her, but he also really loves the universe that she loves, too. And I was like, okay, that's a good moment. But then, of course, you get back to the planet and Titan, and he just loses it again. And it's just like, I don't know.
It was too much like jealous boyfriend, and not enough like I've seen some shiz, and like I have to trust my team and my girlfriend, because healthy relationships are based on trust. I'm just going to put that little nugget of wisdom out there. You know, you would hope
Thor,
that
those
he
muscles.
Would've...
I mean,
I know.
He's like,
you would have
an
hoped.
Angel and a god had a baby.
But at the same time, like I can see that reaction if it seemed like they were messing with him. Right. Like if it seemed like Gamora was kind of messing with him because she knew she could kind of, you know, poke and prod him a little bit. But it genuinely felt like he was just being a jealous boyfriend. And that is so unattractive. And it's so, you're right. It's so not the character we left with. And it's annoying. It made him just kind of annoying. Like he was just kind of annoying in this film. You weren't like, yeah, Star-Lord. You're like, oh, thank God.
You know, I looked at it a different way. Yes, he regressed. But the way that I see it is that when has he ever had a steady relationship with a woman before? He has no idea how to do that. He is learning as he's going. And when it comes down to brass tacks, he does have that right reaction where he does what he promised he would do. It doesn't work, but he did it. And then later on, he goes crazy.
Nothing worse than blowing bubbles in the end. So.
But and
then trying to kill your sweetie and then coming out as bubbles. Yeah, no, we've all been
there.
Yeah,
it happens. And so yes, I agree that it was annoying and it was frustrating, but I can understand where it's coming from. I don't like where it's coming from, but it's understandable because he hasn't had any good role models in this area at all.
But why was it necessary to include this in this? I mean, there's so much you want to tell and show in this storyline, just like the whole Scarlet Witch vision romance crap. Like, why was any of that necessary?
Because it happened in the comics.
It doesn't matter. You can build relationships and establish loyalties and you can value human life without there needing to be romantic elements to it. And you're trying to pack so much into a film already. Why just muddle it with all of that? And like, why?
I would say this. I think that you can do that. I don't have a problem with it being in there.
Me either.
I just think you could do it better. Yeah. I feel like it does feel a little bit juvenile with the relationships between both of the major couples here. It just feels not quite as nuanced as I would hope. Luckily, in the end, it's like 5 minutes of screen time, and then we can move on to something else because we've got to move on to something else. So,
because you have to right, move exactly. on to something else because so, there's 50,000 things
I love
to show.
Because we move... I don't like the Thor movies. I don't like any of the Thor movies. I can't stand them. But...
they're my favorite.
The Thor in this movie, this Thor and Rocket and Groot together was the best part of the movie to me. Like, I really enjoyed that storyline, and I enjoyed how the Russo brothers took all of the weight that should have been on him at the end of Ragnarok, and instead of making it a joke, they made Thor deal with all of the S that he's just been through in the last few years, and it was so good, because Chris Hemsworth, he plays it as somebody who wants to make it a joke, but he can't because he's dying inside. And it was so well done. And like so Rocket, they actually took the growth from Rocket in volume 2 and brought it here. So he's like now being the person that Yondu was to him in that movie. And it's like the whole thing is just, who would have thought that in the Avengers movie, my favorite character was going to be Thor and what he went through in this film. And it's all up to the Russo brothers taking the universe seriously here. They took all of the story elements, and they truly understand that this is not a joke. The Marvel Universe doesn't have to be a joke. You can take the story seriously, and you can still have fun with him, but you can also do it in a way that validates what the characters are going through in a way that makes it feel real. And their storyline together was so much fun, but at the same time, it was the best part of the movie to me, because it had all the emotion, it had the weight, and it had the spectacle that I felt like a lot of the rest of the movie kind of lacked. So
I agree. I loved the Thor storyline, and I loved Thor. I think Chris Hemsworth did an amazing job in this role, and I said Thor's are my favorite movies. They're up there. I didn't like Dark World. Let's be honest. Who did like Dark World? But
I don't think anybody liked Dark World.
I don't think anybody liked Dark World. Natalie Portman didn't like Dark World. But I did. I mean, I did think that his character played such an interesting part in this storyline as well, that I loved it. I didn't particularly care for Peter Dinklage's character. I don't think it came off the way they wanted it to.
Oh, I thought it was kind of funny, but that's just me.
I just, it was too clunky for me to be that funny. I was like, oh, I get it. He's a tiny person. He's actually huge. Oh, I get it. Like, his hands are gone. Okay. Like, I don't know. I don't think it ruined anything for me, but that part was definitely not my favorite part. But especially this weird accent that just made him like talk slow and in a weird speech pattern, and yeah, anyway, but I agree, I loved the Thor storyline, and I did agree when you started adding up everything he's gone through, and he's like, well, what about your mom? You still have a mom, right? He's like, nope, she's dead too,
killed by dark elves,
and you are now pretty much the last of your kind, no home world.
Yeah. Yeah,
no,
just FYI, people, Thanos only killed half the Asgardians, so all the people you cared about were on the other ship. Yep. Don't worry.
That's well, except for Heimdall and Loki.
Yeah, Heimdall.
And Loki.
Yeah. And Loki.
And what's his face would have been on there too? The guy who the director played.
Korg.
Probably not. He'll be in.
He better be back.
If they do another.
He was on that one. They showed you when they left. He was on the same ship as
Thor.
That
doesn't mean he stayed there. I don't know.
But that doesn't mean he stayed on there. Because also Valkyrie's not dead too. So, I mean, we know all
Well, we don't know that. We don't know who died. We just know that they weren't in
this film. We
didn't
see her body. Therefore, she's not dead.
Exactly.
If I don't see a body,
I'll take it. I mean, I don't want Valkyrie.
Me either.
I'll take
Tessa Thompson any day of the week and twice on Sunday.
But I'm just saying, like, we now have him being one of the last of his kind. Like, he's huge weight you've got on him, you know? Like, again, I feel like every major character has some sort of parallel to the villain, right? Like, Thanos is probably the last of his race, as we sort of get implied. Thor is one of the last of his race, just like, you know, that was implored, because so much of his race died before they even got on those ships, you know, like everyone he knew, all his buddies died before they even got on the ship. So you're already dealing with a really small population that's now even smaller. So I feel like it's so interesting that every character has some small part that ties back to this villain in this film. And if it's intentional or unintentional,
it's intentional.
Whatever, but
yeah,
it's the Russo brothers. It's intentional.
Yeah. I think the one character I obviously personally want more of, and we don't get a ton of in the movie, which I was a little disappointed, was Cap. He doesn't get a ton to do, although I do think his action sequence with Black Widow and
Falcon in Scotland,
in Scotland, saving them is probably the best action sequence of the entire movie, just because it just really it reminds me of classic Russo brothers from Civil War or
Winter Soldier,
where it's a little bit more intimate, and they're very good at staging that type of action. And watching those three heroes work together to save Vision and Scarlet Witch was really cool, because they were really working really well together. You can tell they've been doing a lot of stuff in the last few years undercover, and so. I wish we'd gotten a little bit more of him. I mean, the best line in the movie is, "And somebody get this man a shield." Mm-hmm.
But I mean, at the same time, you have to figure out where you're going to put your stock in a movie like this, right? And I feel like we did get so much of Cap between Winter Soldier and Civil War. Like, we know a lot about him and his backstory and stuff. So if you had to sacrifice one of the characters to spend a little less time with, that's probably the one to do it with, especially because then he made such an impact when he was on the screen. Like, he really capitalized on that time where he was there, right? Like, he did not waste a moment of it. Every moment it was intentional and kind of intense. I feel like now that we've sort of whittled down the playing field, if you will, we'll spend more time with him in part two. So I think that that's kind of like that compromise that you bring to the table. Plus, I think that along those lines of the great fight scenes, I really liked when Thanos came to the battlefield in Wakanda and you saw him sort of take one by one and take them out. And I liked the thematic they used, where it was like not a lot of noise with it. I kind of like when they use sound as a love, as an intensity thing, right? There, everything was kind of slow and quiet, and it doesn't mean it was easy. It just means like it was different. So I kind of like that scene as well, because it did also feel kind of intimate, right? You got to have this like these intimate one tete-a-tetes with Thanos.
Yeah.
So
I will say, Captain America is my favorite character. He was my first superhero comic when I was 4, so that's almost 45 years ago. Almost 41 years ago. I'm going to be 45. So for me, I didn't feel like he was shortchanged, because everything he did was with purpose. And the first time he appears...
I'm not saying he was shortchanged.
Oh, no.
I don't want to be
no, no,
here.
No.
I just wanted more. I'm
yes,
like,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I will always want more Cap.
Selfish.
I will always want more Cap. Always, 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 always. And I know I can't have it forever, so I'm going to enjoy every bit I can while I still have him. In the theater I was in, the minute he shows up on screen, whole audience erupts in cheers.
Yep.
And I'm just like, yes, that's the reaction I wanted to hear too. And I just love him. I love everything he did. And that look on Thanos's face when he grabs the gauntlet and he's actually, he's resisting.
His own,
And Thanos has got this look on his face like, what? Who are you? Quack. But for a moment, he was just like, whoa, wait a minute. This should not be happening.
This is the guy who could pick up the hammer at this point if it was there.
Oh, he could pick up Mew Mew.
Was around.
Absolutely, could pick up Mew Mew.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you guys a little bit about that. So I like to think of it as culling the hero herd in this film, because there's a lot of loss in the movie, but extra textually from the film, we know all those heroes will come back because they all have movies coming up.
Yep.
But what I thought it does is more than being emotional, because I'm not emotional about losing these heroes that are all just going to come back in the first movie. But what I thought was really smart is they are now going to have they basically have the original Avengers back. And that next movie will get to focus on all the Avengers who may actually not come back ever again. And so we all will be worried about Cap and Iron Man and Black Widow and, you know, War Machine and Hulk. Will they actually survive? And I think that it was so smart to use this as an opportunity to lose everybody so that we can focus on a more core group. And it will be probably a little bit more intimate of a film next movie with those characters that we didn't get to have a lot of time with so much in this. And I thought that was really, to me, that's the best part of the loss in this movie of those characters, is that it allows them the freedom to be able to explore those characters that may or may not legitimately ever come back to the MCU after Avengers 4.
So I 1,000% agree with that. I think that's exactly what it is. I feel like, so not knowing the Infinity War storyline going in, I don't think I expected Thanos to win, because in every other superhero movie, and my husband will go on and on and on about how this always annoys the hell out of him, none of the superheroes are really in any peril because they will always win in the end, and boo-hoo, right? He hates that. Drives him crazy. And I'm always like, just let it go. You know what's going to happen. But anyway, sorry, I digress. But I think what this is going to do is it's going to give us the ability to have a proper goodbye with these characters that we've spent the last 10 years sort of growing up into the universe with. And sort of, I feel like it's going to then let us kind of come into the second generation of superheroes. And, you know, we might see a couple of cameos or homages in future movies, but I really think that a lot of these characters are going to retire, sort of like we retired Hawkeye, and there's another one that we don't.
They'll be back. But.
Fury, right? Like, we kind of have retired some of these characters that were so important early on, and we've moved on to other storylines. I think it's a good way. Like, I don't necessarily think you always have to kill off a character to say goodbye to the character. And so I think giving us the ability to focus on them for this movie is going to let them go off into the sunset as heroes, whether alive or dead, because I don't think you're going to kill all of them. Like, I don't think you're going to just kill all of the original Avengers. But I do think some are going to die that we will see. But I do think a lot of them are going to retire. I know personally, actor-wise, you know, both Chris
Evans.
Thank you. There's so many of them. Chris Evans and Robert Downey Jr. have both expressed the fact that they're kind of done. You know, they've been doing this for 10 years. It's hard on your body. It typecasts.
Well,
you.
It's not hard on Robert Downey Jr.'s body because he doesn't really have to look that great, but Chris Evans does, you know?
Well, like, but it's still hard. No, I mean, he doesn't do all of the stunts, but, like, you know, it's still physically demanding, and it's been 10 years and he wasn't young when he started. So, you know, there's lots of them that are like, I'm kind of ready to call it. Like, I liked representing this character, but I need to, like, move on or just kind of take some time. So I think this is a good way to, like, send him off into the sunset with a nice little salute and a nice little, like, giving them their moment to shine, if you will. So I wasn't expecting people to die.
Well, then you got a
and
shocker.
Then they did, and I was like, okay, all right. So there's that. That happened. I kind of just stared at the screen for a second.
Stunned silence, like, is what we had.
All right.
In our theater.
Yep. Yes, us too. And then I was like, you know what? I'll take it. And I kind of walked out, and I was like texting people. And I was like, have you seen the movie yet? I want to talk about it.
There was.
Because I wasn't expecting it.
There was one woman in our theater who was not happy. And she expressed it very vocally in a theater full of children.
Oh, we had that too. The guy right next to me was like, what the F?
Well, what?
And then other people were like going, what? No! Like, out loud.
Yeah.
Like,
in our theater, nothing. It was dead silence. And then you hear this voice and she says, F this movie, at the top of her lungs. This was 11:15 in the morning and it was half full of children. Half adults, half children. Aww. Not okay. I'm sorry that you were upset that Groot died, but you need to learn when it's appropriate to shout the F word in the middle of a movie. That time is never.
I hope you're listening to this podcast
she's
right
probably
now.
Not. Actually, she works with my husband and we didn't know that at the time.
Oh, no. Well, I do know that, I mean, we're talking about loss here and, you know, as adults and reasonable people, we can see where this is going. We can be like, oh, okay, so that's how that makes sense. We like that, blah, blah, blah. But I can tell you that I have a friend here in town who took her son to see the movie because he loves the Avengers. He loves Marvel. And she's like, it's the big thing. Everyone's talking about it. I want to say he's about 9. And she goes, I really wish I had done what I do with every other movie and I had seen it myself first and then taken him, because apparently he's very severely traumatized by watching his childhood heroes like die on screen. Like, she was not prepared to have the discussion. She was not prepared to kind of cope with his grief. And it's been a hard week for her. So it was really interesting to see that impact had on kids. And she was like, she was on Facebook, like, FYI, parents, like, do yourself a favor and go see it before you take your kids, you know, because now she's having to talk about life and death. And, you know, she doesn't want to like ruin it by being like, they'll come back, don't worry, you know, because she doesn't know for sure. And she doesn't want to tell them that. And then some of them don't come back or whatever. So, you know, it's really, really interesting when you think about it from an adult versus a kid. And this, you know, may not be so profound for us, but kids are like, freaking out about this. So
as an adult, I'll tell you right now that yes, I had trouble with all of the deaths, even though I knew without a doubt they were coming. I didn't know which ones they would be though. And when it was Peter, that ripped the heart out of my chest.
That one was hard.
And threw it in the trash and then shook it out of the trash and stomped on it for 5 minutes or so and then put it back in my chest. I have feels. I have really strong feels. And that one just really, I was just like ugly crying at that point.
I will say in terms of the deaths themselves, like cinematically, I think they did the best they could. I think that the way they chose to kill people was interesting. Like they weren't erased from existence and they didn't like explode into a fiery ball or just disappear, right? They sort of faded away. However, I wish they'd all faded away at the same time. There was this weird series that didn't work of things and people and like, you know, the person disappears in the helicopter and in the car in the final scene and the after scene or whatever. And then there's time for a character to get out, go check on them, be like, they're gone, and then disappear. And a time for another character who's been a whole time to then take out a pager and send a message and then dissipate. Like that to me, like chronologically, it just either they need to be disappearing like whoosh or all at the same time. And instead you got this like weird janky, like I'm disappearing. Oh, I'm disappearing. Oh, I'm disappearing. Like it didn't seem to happen simultaneously. And that was weird to me.
Yeah.
As a
viewer. The 4G on the Infinity Gauntlet was dropping in and out. So after he snapped his fingers,
your internet connection was unstable.
Yeah, it was unstable. And so they couldn't all go out at the same time.
Oh, nothing worse than janky.
I know.
4G.
Janky infinity coverage.
What are you going to do when there's not a wireless network nearby? You have to rely on 4G. And
And it's just
or like
good.
The roulette wheel was still spinning. Okay, number 30, number, it's like waiting at the DMV. All right, number 47, 48, who's 49? 49, oh, Nick Fury, you're 49.
Good thing you got that message to Captain Marvel before you went. Good job.
Just in time. Right, so it's just like, that was like kind of janky for me as a viewer. I was like, they should have all sort of been disappearing at the same time and you can go back and show me individually who's passing, but like, it just seemed to like not have any rhyme or reason behind how it happened.
There was something just about this for me, like wrapping up the movie, and like it felt for a while, it kind of felt like only half a movie, and in a lot of ways I think
it is
half a movie, right? Because I was talking to John Mills about this, you know, that this is part one of the part two epic, you know, the big double issue part two epic, you know, and this is only part one of it. But one of the things that I kind of came to that that made this movie feel like it had more resolution in the sense was when Strange tells Tony, you know, that there's only one way. And that they, so basically it becomes they have to lose to win. And so in a lot of ways, this is going back to some of those biblical ideas. This is the Avengers Good Friday. It looks like they've lost. It looks like the end has come. It looks like the devil has won. But we know that Resurrection Sunday will come, right? And so in a lot of ways, that actually helped me when I came to that realization the other day. It actually helped me find more peace with the way this movie is constructed in the sense that it feels more like it has that kind of resolution to it. And it feels more holistic as a film than just being a part one of part two. So to me, that was something that actually really helped and just made it, again, as we've talked about the whole thing, kind of connecting these corruptions of the biblical epic. This was another one of those corruptions in some way. But in some ways, too, it was more of just a porting over. It wasn't just really a corruption. It was just kind of like, okay, I get it. It looks like we've lost, but we have to lose to win.
So. Yeah, it's a new definition. Yeah.
Yes.
You win by not winning. That's
I
how
have
you win.
Faced that situation in many an RPG video game.
Leroy Jenkins. That was Thor at the end of the movie when he came in. I just wanted him to be screaming that, you know, just like,
oh, that would have been awesome.
God, just dub it over. Yes! When it comes out on video, just dub it over.
I want somebody to dub that scene with Thor coming in.
If you do that,
Jenkins.
If you do that, you can find Matt Rushing on Instagram at MatthewRushing02.
Send it to him.
I think in this case, I think as a society or as a viewing culture, if you will, we've been sort of soured on multi-part movies. You know, you have frickin' The Hobbit, which is a 150-page book made into a 3-part movie. You know, I think that you just, I know everyone just cringed when I said that.
No, I'm not cringing because I love that series, but we're not going to go down that road, so.
But I mean, in that case, you have a short book that's expanded to be 3 movies, and you have so many TV shows and just movies in general, like Harry Potter was, the last one was 2 parts, right? You've got so many parts that I feel like as a society, we're a little soured on them, or they feel a little cheap, right? They feel like you're just trying to get more money out of me. You're just trying to get me to be hyped about it longer or whatever. But in this case, because of how long this original story is in the graphic novel sense, and then it's just based in how it's an entire like thing in the universe, right? Like this is a
huge
thing, like a huge, people love this entire part of this universe, that I actually think that it was smart of them to make it 2 parts instead of trying to force everything into this 1 part, because it was already so incredibly full and so incredibly long. It is the longest Marvel movie to date, that I think if you kept trying to push it in, you would have just done such a worse job with it. So for me, I never minded that it was a 2-part. I don't even think I realized it was a 2-part until I kind of got done and I was like, oh yeah, there's another Avengers coming out relatively soon.
A year from now. May 3rd.
Right, but that's sooner than when was Inconvenience of Ultron? Yeah. It was like 2 years ago.
I think it's like 3 years ago.
It's been a while.
It's 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Yeah, it's been a pretty long time, right? We've had several movies since then. So but for this to come out so quickly, you know, it's like, oh, okay, so I get it. It's like a 2-parter, but they didn't want to tell you that too early on. So you didn't like think
well,
that.
And what's interesting is just when they were making this movie, it was Avengers Infinity War Part 1 and Part 2. That's what they were called. And they changed it so that it's going to be called, we don't know yet. And so
Avengers,
yes,
4.
Yeah, Avengers 4 as yet unnamed.
So I want to ask you guys, we were going long, but that's okay, because it's a long movie. So
it's the longest Marvel movie.
It didn't
movie
seem
today.
Like it to me, though.
I wanted to ask you guys, though, about... So this movie has all of these different action set pieces, and it actually feels like it has one every 3 seconds, because there's just so much happening in the movie. And so I wanted to ask you guys that about that idea of just the action in the movie. And how you felt about the action in the movie.
I liked the action better than the dialogue. I think that you had multiple, you had different approaches to different I don't want to say series, but, you know, the Guardians has its own sort of dialogue and tone, and Thor has its own dialogue and tone, and Stark has his own dialogue and tone. And that's really hard to get that to flow together in one giant story. So I feel like they were mostly successful. They were probably as successful as I could ask them to be with that. So for me, action is kind of one of those things that it's the same in every language. You know, they're all of its action, and they can make that more consistent. So I kind of liked it. And like we mentioned a little early on, I felt like a lot of the action was a little more intimate than we've maybe gotten in the past, and a little more like the Civil War action, where you're kind of, shots were a little tighter. You got more one-on-one fighting and less like groups coming at things together. You know, so I liked the action. It was enough of it that it worked for me. We moved. I think the pace was good for me. So overall, I was on board. Let's kick some more butt.
I was on board as well, because there is a sense of urgency throughout this film, because Thanos is collecting these gems. You know, once he decided to finally get off his throne and do it himself.
Once he got off his hot horse.
Okay, I'll do it myself. Well, it's about freaking time, because how many times do people have to fail you before you take matters into your own hands? And so there is that sense of urgency throughout the movie. Even in the quieter parts, there's still this sense of urgency. Like, he's got this many stones. Now he's got this many. Now he's got this many. And what are we going to do? And
it kind of leads to their downfall, right? Because they're all acting in this sense of panic, or this like immediate need to respond, versus taking a moment to figure out what to do, which would have been a much more boring movie.
Yeah, well, and that's
movie,
the thing.
But
they don't have a moment to take. They don't. They have to respond as quickly as possible, because he's just getting more powerful with each stone. And now he can just travel without a spaceship. So, you know, it's just like,
right.
Now what do you do? So for me, it was... There was much hand crushing. My poor husband, he's so kind to me. And I never felt like I was being let down by quieter parts. And I never felt like the action was too much. It seemed to be the perfect balance. And for someone who has really efficient kidneys and usually has to get up at least once during a movie, I did not get up during this movie. Even if I had been dying, I would not have gotten up during this movie, because I would have missed something important. So,
yeah, I really needed to get up about 15 minutes before the end. And I was like, no, you can wait it out. You can do it. Power through, mama.
And I usually right about the 1 hour, 1 hour and a half mark, no matter how much I've had to drink or how little I've had to drink, does not matter. My kidneys are like, oh, you're in a movie theater. Guess what? I know you just went right before we started, but hello. And that didn't happen this time. I don't know if it was because I cried a lot, because there were tears.
It came out the other way.
It must have come out the other way. And it wasn't necessarily crying always for sadness. It was crying because of excitement. It was crying because I'm finally seeing Cap again, and I'm so happy. You know, just all of that. I cry for everything. For every emotion, there's a cry in me. So that may have been what it was. So to me, it felt balanced. I didn't have a problem with any of the pacing, and I'm surprised it was as long as it was. So when I got out of it.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah.
Matthew, what about you?
I didn't have a problem with any of the pacing. You know, I felt like for the most part, the movie is paced as well as it can with everything that they're trying to cram into it. For me, though, the actual action scenes and set pieces, for the most part, I found them really blasé. It felt
boring.
They were really boring. And mainly part of that was, to me, it felt like Michael Bay action. Like, it's just a lot of CGI being thrown at you, and especially like...
Are you kind of thinking like the scene, the very end at Titan?
I'm thinking of just every action scene. Like, none of them had... Like, and I was really surprised, because the Russos are the ones who have created, I think, the best action set pieces in the MCU. I'm thinking of all the fight scenes in Winter Soldier are just amazing. Yeah. Everything they did, and I felt like in Civil War, really worked, especially the end battle scene. I mean, that is just so brutal and beautiful all at the same time. But this... It felt like Michael Bay action. It didn't have a lot of the weight that I expected it to have. And part of that, too, was especially that end battle scene in Wakanda. You're just, like, all over the place. It's mostly CGI, and I didn't feel like they were doing the thing that Peter Jackson's so good at the Lord of the Rings trilogy, where major action set pieces are happening, but you feel like you're following a story in it. I didn't feel like I was following a good story in that large of an action set piece. It just felt like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we did this? And wouldn't it be cool if they did this? And what, you know, like, there wasn't that flow that I expected the Russos to have. So for me, honestly, that's the thing that I kind of was frustrated about in the movie. I wasn't seeing anything that made this stand out as... There's nothing in here that I haven't already seen in the MCU, which I'm a little disappointed in. Whereas every other movie, especially the ones that they had done, they found a way to make it something special specifically to, like, when you watch Winter Soldier, it's like you're going to see some brutal, very brutal fight scenes that feel like a, you know, a 70s spy movie. You know, you're going to see really personal battle scenes together in Civil War. And I expected something in this one, but I just didn't feel like I got it.
I can see that. For me, the story, I didn't need a story because I thought that they were just trying to kind of spread desperation, how it was kind of like they didn't really have a chance. You know, like they're just kind of endlessly coming. And, you know, they talked about they sacrificed themselves to get through the barrier. And, you know, they just sort of felt like there was never going to win and there was just kind of no hope. So why tell more of a story through that is kind of the feeling I took from it. And for me, the minions in that scene just reminded me of the demi dogs from Stranger
You know,
Thing.
I thought of that.
It was a whole
I thought
of that.
Of that, but I also thought of the lickers from Resident Evil. And yeah, so, except they didn't have the long tongues. So, and then I also kind of thought of Venom. And so it was like a combination of those three things.
Or Tremors.
Like, yes, Tremors. Yeah. Yeah. So,
it was just like a whole weird combo of a creature that you don't really know where
and
it came from.
I don't
from,
think I want to know where it came from. Ugh.
But let me put it this way. I wanted this battle to feel like the Battle of Helm's Deep for these heroes, where they really do lose the entire time until the very end, right? And we're just not going to get that very end in this movie because they're just going to continue to lose. But I just wanted it to feel more epic and personal kind of at the same time. And that doesn't, it just didn't, for me, it didn't happen.
You didn't have like the drama.
Yeah,
behind
exactly.
That
there
scene
wasn't.
That you really
it
wanted.
Was just action for action's sake instead of it really connecting me to what's happening, and that happens more at the very, very end when it's like, you know, when it's Cap against Thanos, you know, and you have that emotion of that scene there, or when Thanos is stopping Scarlet Witch and turning back time, like you get. I don't know. You finally get back to where the story's been going the whole time. Anyway, so
I can see where you're coming from. I didn't necessarily look for it. I got that fulfilled in the scene you were just describing versus the other scene. So for me, I was like, all right, I got my like intense drama moment already that I didn't need to get from that like battlefield. Because to me, the drama in that scene was up in the like the medical bay.
Yeah.
Versus down on the battle.
Yeah, it was. They were all fighting so that Shuri would have time.
Everybody was literally kung fu fighting. So, you know.
They were fast as lightning, literally.
Yeah, this is the movie where everybody was kung fu fighting. So we really could continue to talk about this, honestly, I think for another hour. But we're not going to. Because we don't have
because you should just go see the movie. Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you guys to kind of come down to what you would rate Infinity War. So, Brandy, what do you think?
Well, you know how I am. I always tend to rate things higher than other people. And so, let's see. It's going to end up being like 15 out of 10 wandering Captain America nomads for me, because this I have waited most of my life to see something like this and never thought it would happen. And I didn't feel disappointed at all. So for me, it was a win. And, you know, and nothing's perfect. And I'm not saying that it is. But for me, it was a total win. So.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, especially since you've been a Marvel fan for your whole life. I mean, I think
that's what fan is short for. Fan is short for fanatic. So,
well, you get the full word. You don't even get the abbreviation. You are worthy of that full word.
Thank you.
In the best, and that is the best way.
No, I'm taking it that as a compliment. Totally.
What about you, Drea?
Okay. Considering I had zero expectations for this movie, I went in with my bar like real low, guys. I'm gonna give it 45 out of 60 seconds of the dying neutron star. Nice.
So gone in 60 seconds. Got it.
45 of 60. It's an excellent movie, but I had some gripes. But overall, I would see it again.
Yeah. So I am definitely glad that I saw this. I am glad I saw it twice, mainly just because there was so much happening. And even though I've seen all of these movies before, you know, the all 18 films, I still feel like it was hard to catch my breath in the film. And I put in my written review, it kind of felt like somebody gave you a gourmet burger and then asked you to eat it in a minute. You know, like there's just so much happening. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. But I do think, for me, this movie it's just somewhere in the middle for Marvel, which isn't bad. I mean, like there's 19 movies. This is number 10 for me. It's good and it's enjoyable. I think that I'm probably going to like the second one much better. And I think part of that is because it's going to feel more personal and it's going to feel more it's going to be more about the characters that we all have loved for 10 years. So, but, you know, all in all, I think this is, it's fun to see all these characters interact with each other. That's probably the best part of the movie, is just seeing them all interact with each other and how they play off each other. And so, yeah, for me, this is 3.5 out of 5 cap shields, you know? And I've got to say, if there is not a moment in the next movie where Cap and Tony get...
Somebody gives Cap a shield.
When the Cap and Tony have a conversation and Tony hands him back his Captain America shield and says, this is yours, they're doing something wrong.
So I feel like my rating on this might change just based on the second part. If it becomes predictable and cliche ridden, then I feel like it will affect how I feel about this film as well, because to me, they have to go together, right? I mean, you can kind of treat them individually, but at the same time, they sort of weigh upon each other. So I want to put that sort of, you know, little tick out there that if the next one sucks totally and they totally ruin it, then my rating on this one will probably go down. They've raised my expectations and they better meet them. Otherwise, I'm going to shake my fist at them. I will not curse in a room full of children, but I will shake my fist at them.
I will say too, I also kind of think it would be a cool ending to have. So if Chris Evans is like, yeah, I'm done, just let Cap be the one who takes on the first Avenger, have him be the one who puts on the gauntlet and rewrites the universe to put it back, and that take his life. Like, that just seems like the perfect ending to that character to me. Like, what a way to go out, to save the entire universe as you know it. And it makes sense because that's what he did as the first Avenger. You know, like,
it's not gonna be Stark, because we gave him something to live for. And
because he's got a baby, probably.
Well, but now, no, we've already had him have his whole self-sacrifice moment. Like, he's already been there. We've already been there and we've already done that. We've got to give it to somebody different. It'll either be Chris Hemsworth as Thor, because Thor can come back as a different person. You know, Thor is the power and not Chris Hemsworth. There's a lot you can do with it. My favorite fan theory out there, though, before we call it, is the idea that they could bring back Natalie Portman's character, Jane Foster, that she could be be an incredible resource for helping them write what's happened.
Could be. I don't know if Cap is capable physically of withstanding the gauntlet.
I don't know either. I mean,
look, but, Adam Warlock is going to come into it. There's reason that they introduced him. Yes, he's got a different origin story.
But not till the next Guardians movie.
How do we know that? I have a feeling that he's going to show up in Avengers 4.
I'm hooked on a feeling.
Hooked on a feeling.
That song came out the year I was born. Anyway.
But yeah.
Okay. So.
We could speculate for hours,
guys. But I really think it's been a blast.
It has been.
I think we've had a fantastic time, and thank you so much. Really want to say thank you to Ken Tripp and Davis Grayson for supporting us through Patreon. They're our associate producers here on the show, and they know that we can't do this alone here on Trek FM. It's just too big of a network. So go over to patreon.com/trekfm. See how you can support the network each and every month and make sure all this content keeps coming to you. Honestly, every little bit helps. And so, again, just go over to patreon.com/trekfm and see how you can be part of our Avengers team. So, Drea, if anybody wants to talk to you some more about Avengers or anything else you've got going on, where can they find you?
You can come tell me who your Gamora would be to join us in the Soul Gym. Since Matthew won't tell me his. On Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman. At COFFMAN. And you can also hear Matthew and I come talk about our other obsession, which is Harry Potter, on the Owl Post, which is on the Nerd Party Network, where we go through chapter by chapter of the Harry Potter books. We are about a third of the way through Goblet of Fire right now. So that's where we are at. And that's where you can generally find me, either taking care of an infant or reading Harry Potter. So,
and what about you?
You know, both equally exciting
and unpredictable.
Yeah, and unpredictable. Well played.
What about you, Brandy?
Well, you can find me lurking in the Babel Conference from time to time, and you can find me on Twitter at BrandyWine12. Brandy is spelled with an I. The 12 is a number. I also am on the Trek FM network on Warp 5, which is the Star Trek Enterprise podcast with my friends Brandon Shamatella and Patrick Devlin. And I do a podcast with my lovely husband Dave called the Dark Corner Podcast, which you can find on strangeanddeadly.com, but we are getting our own subdomain, so soon you'll be able to find it at the Dark Corner Podcast. .com. And I do curse in that one. So, not for children. I will not curse in front of children. So,
she's not doing it in a movie theater, folks.
She's not.
No.
She's not. Well, thank you. You could find me. Thank you, both of you. This really has been a brilliant show.
Been a pleasure.
So, I'm just going to call it brilliant show.
And Matthew just became brilliant.
It's been wonderful. I'm so pleased.
It's been fantastic,
I was here.
Darling.
Yes,
just
absolutely.
Love it. But you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. I'm on Instagram under the same name. I'm here on the network also doing The Orb with Chris Jones talking about Deep Space Nine. I am on the Nerd Party Network with Drea, of course, with Owlpost, and with John Mills talking all about Star Wars and aggressive negotiations. So make sure you check out both of those shows. They really are so much fun. And then last but not least, I am doing Cinema Stories with my good friend Courtney, where we talked a lot about themes from the Bible in this movie. And we do that for every film over there on Cinema Stories. So check it out. So, but thank you so much for joining us. And Thanos, where we turn.